boasts from Cambridge Analytica execs of working for Donald Trump. In footage aired by the UK's Channel 4 on Tuesday, they say the company helped Donald Trump score a victory in the 2016 election and ran key parts of his campaign. The British consultancy has sparked a scandal over Facebook's data policies after Channel 4 released two video reports from an undercover investigation. The latest program shows a secretly recorded meeting with CA's now suspended CEO.
The jarring reality of school shootings in the U.S. has given rise to a budding industry. Active shooter insurance policies for schools to cover the cascade of bills that can follow a violent incident, from lawyers' fees to trauma counseling, media consultants to building reconstruction. The need for active shooter insurance first cropped up for malls and movie theaters following deadly shootings like the one in an Aurora, Colorado theater in 2012.
BMW leading the charge with its effort to bring 25 electrified models to market by 2025. It's raising spending for research and development to an all-time high of up to 7 billion euros this year. The maker of BMW, Rolls-Royce and Mini vehicles says that despite the increased spending, it expects group pre-tax profit to be over 10 billion euros in 2018.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It is March 22nd, 5:10 in the morning, and we're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. It's Thought Leader Thursday on the program, and Chuck Garcia is here today from Associated Bank. We're going to be talking a little bit about the rate hike yesterday by the Federal Reserve and some other issues as well. And then later in the program, author Mark Penn will be here. He's the author of Microtrends Squared, The New Small Forces Driving the Big Disruptions Today is the title of the book. He thinks he has a handle on what the coming years. And Mark will be with us in our second segment this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures off triple digits this morning, down nearly 161 points. NASDAQ futures are off by more than a percent, 78 points. And NASDAQ futures, S&P futures are lower by about 20 points this morning. Around the globe, lots of red on the screen. In Europe, where the market in Germany is down by about a percent. Same story in France, a half a percent in London. And in Asia, markets are generally mixed. The Nikkei is off about a half a percent, down 99 points. And oil is trading this morning at $64.76 a barrel, which is down about 41 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg says he believes it's time to impose more regulations on technology companies as they play an increasingly important role in the world. But he isn't spelling out what kind of rules he would support beyond requiring clear disclosure about who is paying for online ads. Zuckerberg told CNN in an interview yesterday that no, it is no longer a question about whether Facebook and other large tech companies should be more closely regulated. Instead, he says lawmakers need to work with companies to figure out what regulations make the most sense. And in that interview about the 2016 election, he said this. To the interviewer.
You told me in 2004, when I was getting started with Facebook, that a big part of my responsibility today would be to help protect the integrity of elections against interference by other governments. I wouldn't have really believed that that was going to be something that I would have to work on.
Mark Zuckerberg last night on CNN, the full interview is online this morning. Facebook shares have suffered a tremendous loss this week, down more than 8% earlier in the week. They did gain a little bit of that ground yesterday. The Federal Reserve, as expected yesterday, raised its key interest rate, signaled confidence in the U.S. economy's durability, but plans to continue the gradual approach of rate hikes for 2018 under new chairman Jerome Powell seems to be going full speed ahead. And next year, at least three rate hikes in 2019, as there's more optimistic expectations for growth and low unemployment. It is Thought Leader Thursday, and Chuck Garcia is here this morning. He's the Executive Vice President and Director of Commercial Deposits Treasury Management at Associated Bank. And we're going to talk a little bit about those rate increases and more. Chuck, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
The Federal Reserve is meeting. This is their big week.
And we will see a rate increase likely, three more of them coming this year. How does that affect your landscape, your world these days?
Well, it affects it a lot. Customers expecting to see their rates rise and banks trying to hold the line, for having rates basically at zero for, almost 10 years. Banks are trying to hold the line on what they pay back. But certainly as the rates continue to rise, the pressure to increase rates for deposit clients is growing. A lot of pressure from competitors. And then different sectors have different expectations, too, of what type of rates they're expecting. So you see a lot of movement, too. We're seeing a lot of movement out of core checking accounts. I'm talking on the corporate side predominantly here, out of core checking accounts into interest-bearing. Before, it didn't matter so much, mm-hmm. and so they'd take advantage of whatever internal rates we would give them for their services. So seeing a lot of different change, and then obviously the effects of clients eventually bringing much more money onshore is going to be an interesting piece, too.
Yeah, and that's the segue that I wanted to get us to, is that with the tax bill that was passed, there is some indication that companies, corporations are going to start bringing offshore cash back. Is there any evidence that's happening yet? And, if it's not, when do we expect to see whether or not that's really going to take place?
I don't know that we have seen a big swell of that just yet, but you expect it. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Do they invest more in their own companies? Do they diversify in some way? But there's no doubt it's going to be coming. We don't see an immediate impact in our bank, but there's no doubt. I'm sure some of the larger banks are seeing some impacts there.
If the companies bring back all of these billions of dollars, whether they spend it on share buybacks or reinvest in their companies, banks are going to get the windfall from this, aren't they? Because it's going to have to go to a bank.
In most cases, yeah, it will. Yeah. Unless they choose a BlackRock or right. things like that. I'm sure they're going to spread money all over, but banks that are well-positioned on their balance sheet, have a good credit standing, and have the wherewithal to take those deposits in, there's an absolute great opportunity.
And the opportunity also exists for banks like Associated to do what else? To start experimenting in some other areas, move into some things that you'd wanted to do before all this money came back?
Well, I think, the key thing for organizations like ours, so we're a mid-cap regional bank. Knowing your customers, I think, is the really key piece for us. Where do we fit in that landscape? We aren't J.P. Morgan, which is a natural source for large blocks of deposits to go, large organizations like that. So knowing our customers and what their expectations are, how we invest, whether it's in technology, a new platform, people, whatever the cases may be, I think the key for us is knowing what our clients are wanting and expecting from us and being able to deliver on that.
If you had a wish list, if they came to you and said, Chuck, what would be your wish list? How would you rank those that you just mentioned there?
Well, I think continuing to invest in technology, it's a must. I mean, the whole convenience factor for large corporates, mid corporates, and consumers is going to continue. While branches are still important and we'll invest in those, I think first on my list would be technology. Second is right behind the people. You have to have the right people to be able to utilize the proper technology in a way that you can make it good for yourself, make it good for your clients. So you can have a great platform, but if you don't know how to position it appropriately and develop it appropriately, it can be actually a disadvantage.
I mean, refresh our memories. Back in 2008 and in the banking crisis that followed, did banks like Associated, did you have to pair a lot of employees? So you kind of, the landscape is different now than it was then?
I think what you would probably find in most organizations is net employees were down somewhat. Mm-hmm. I think what you saw and we saw was a real shifting of what people did. So whereas maybe we had people on the front line out calling on clients, whether they're relationship managers or my treasury management officers, for example, many resources were diverted to compliance. And so you saw a huge shift up. I remember the recruiters calling all the time about compliance people and the need for people in that sector. And that's a huge piece that has grown, not just in large banks, mid caps, but even the small banks had to invest there.
You've talked earlier about technology, and I know we've had conversations, too, about fintechs before. This notion that that they exist by themselves seems to be losing interest, and everybody seems to be turning their attention to how fintechs can help legacy banks. We talked about that before.
We
remember?
Have, yes.
Yeah. So tell us how that's actually taking fruition. How is that coming to fruition?
Well, I think what you're seeing is and I think what you're referring to, we talked earlier, like friend or foe type of thing.
Right.
I think what you're seeing is banks of all sizes today saying, wow, this could really augment something that I've wanted to do, but perhaps I didn't have the resources or the capabilities to make that happen. But Brand X over here has an almost immediate plug and play. So why would I not either invest in them, purchase them, partner with them? Frankly, partnering, I think, is the smartest thing. We as banks tend to absorb those type of entities, and then we make them part of the bank, and they're not as functional as they were. I'm a big fan of partnering with them. And also, they partner and are partnering with a lot of the vendors we use, for example. So we may have a large vendor of service A, and they're partnering with a number of fintechs to integrate into their system. So, you know, where a bank can go directly to a fintech, partner with them, purchase them, I think we're also seeing a significant amount of change in terms of what they're doing with our partners that we partner with on the technology side.
As a matter of fact, there's an article that we pulled in, this really good article from thefinancialbrand.com. It laid out point by point some of the ways that fintechs are helping legacy banks. And I'll just go through a couple, and maybe you could kind of comment on how that may be real world. Fintech improves the health of traditional financial institutions, helps provide a way for legacy financial institutions to improve customer retention and preference, also an opportunity to enhance loan portfolio diversification.
Well, I think there are any number of things, and I think what these two are really directing at, I will tell you overall, banks are not superior in terms of data integration and knowing what all their clients are, who all their clients are, what all the things are that they use. And I think this is referencing, if you can have an intelligence factor that makes you more targeted in whom you call on, what you provide to them, that's a huge advantage. And banks historically, we've not done a great job at that.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, you know, further on that, it's the data analytics, right? It's they can go and do a deeper dive than you can.
Yes.
If you look at a fintech, is there an example out there of a legacy bank and a fintech working together that you've seen?
I think what I've seen more of is I'm really not that aware of anything from the data integration and analytics on that front. What I've seen much more of is payment processing, and maybe there's a specific element that a particular fintech can provide that a bank says, wow, I can send money easier to this client base than I could go develop it for, so let's plug them into our systems. That's what I'm seeing much more of. And granted, I'm in more of the cash management side of the function, mm-hmm. I'm sure there are many more that I'm just not aware of.
And it seems like, and I know we've talked about this before, these mobile payment apps, everybody has one now, a couple of them you can use between banks. Is that the way of the future?
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I think it's the younger generations are, that's just the way they interact with one another, which is a great thing. The second is it's beginning to seep its way into corporate type of payments. And I think there's no doubt about it that will continue to evolve.
So that would be what? So a corporation A could use their app to do banking, basically.
Yeah, today it happens in different forms. It's just maybe not as streamlined as we would like to see or as easy as a consumer type of application. And by all rights, the security necessary in a business-to-business type of payment environment is very significant. That's where the fraudsters love to hit. There's big money to be had. And so that's where a lot of business email compromises or the takeovers are really prevalent today. So I think that once security becomes satisfactory for all parties, I think that evolution will continue.
On to another subject. Since the last time we talked, there's been a lot of news happening about Dodd-Frank and what's happening with that. I know the Senate and the House have both been pushing forward their own plans on this. One of the big plans rolls back some of the banking regulations in some areas. But in others, I know the Senate bill deals with some of the community banks that have been strapped with regulations, pulling a lot of those back. I'm guessing you think that's a good thing.
I think it's a great thing. Yeah. I think we've talked about this before. I'm a big fan of community banks. I think they serve a purpose and a function that larger banks, including ours to some degree, less so us, but the fact that they are in the community, they serve people in that community, farming, whatever the cases may be, I'm a huge fan of that. And they've had to divert enormous amounts of resource into things that are non-customer facing. And mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan of that. I think it will help the economy. Certainly, it will help those banks. And I think it will probably slow some of the combinations of those banks, in my opinion, because some of the combinations that have occurred have just been because it's too expensive to support that structure.
And remind our listeners, too, about what we're talking about here. The community banks have been lumped into a bowl together with giant banks.
Yes.
And the regulations that they're having to deal with are what? Regulations on
well,
what?
Well, the stress testing mm-hmm. that has to occur, just the oversight that has been put on banks of all sizes has been significant. Now, was some level needed? Absolutely. Are these banks systemically important at that level to the whole financial system? Frankly, they're not. They're important to the community, and that they're very, very much needed, but they're not a systemic type of issue to our banking system.
One of the I mentioned that one of the Dodd-Frank plans rolls back a lot of the regulations, and I know that banks have come out and said, we don't want to go that far. Is there a danger here of rolling back too much of this too far?
Well, I think there is. One of the things, you didn't ask this, but I am very much also in favor of increasing the level of systemic importance up to 250. I think that's probably going to happen. I think that will also be good for banks to be able to extend out and combine at levels that you can really get some integration and efficiencies that you can't today. But back to your other point, yeah, I think there is an element that we shouldn't go back to the way it was. I think some moderation is significant, but I also think oversight of the 5-10 real significant systemically important banks, not just domestically but internationally, is absolutely warranted.
The Treasury Department's gotten involved too in some of this. I know they've said that they want to keep some of the powers in place that were created after the financial crisis. One of those is how you wind down a failing bank. Talk to us about that.
Well, I think what we all learned in a painful lesson that was, it's always easy after the fight is done. But in the midst of the crisis, the government interceding and allowing certain institutions to stay or be combined and others not to created mayhem. And I think this is the effort to orderly fashion wind down a systemically important, or any bank, but a systemically important bank in an orderly fashion, I think that's the right thing to do. It takes the government out of direct ownership and deciding your institution is better than mine. We'll let you survive and mine doesn't. I think the shareholder at the end of the day is needing to be on the hook. They lose in that one. But I think an orderly wind down is the appropriate thing.
Anything else on your radar screen these days?
Well, rates obviously are huge. We've got a lot of technology initiatives ourselves that we're trying to build in the bank. So it's great. The economy, knock on wood, continues to be robust in all sectors. We see really promising things for our clients, and it's a good time to be in banking finally.
Chuck, it's always good chatting with you. We'll see you next time.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Chuck Garcia is the EVP and Director of Commercial Deposits at Treasury Management Associated Bank in our Thought Leader conversation this morning. We're going to continue chatting with Chuck after the bell this morning and post that in the podcast of the broadcast a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com. You can listen to past conversations there and over at AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership as well. And make sure you follow Associated Bank on Twitter at Associated Biz.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Tempus, a Chicago startup led by Groupon co-founder Eric Lukowski, raised a whopping $80 million in new funding. The startup is fighting cancer by using machine learning and genomic sequencing to better understand a patient's tumor and tailor treatment plans best suited to combat it. The startup is now valued at over $1 billion. It's getting more and more likely that Elon Musk will get the chance to build a high-speed transit system connecting O'Hare Airport to downtown Chicago. The city announced that two companies, Musk's The Boring Company and O'Hare Express LLC, have moved forward in the process to select a builder for the O'Hare Express system. Chicago is looking to build an express train that will get riders from O'Hare to downtown in 20 minutes or less, and rides must cost less than a current taxi or Uber or Lyft ride. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. 541 now here on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. Glad you're with us. Mark Penn is the author of Microtrends Square, The New Small Forces Driving the Big Disruptions of Today. And we're happy to have him with us this morning as his book hits the marketplace. Mark, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning.
Let's talk a little bit about what you attack here. You've written about microtrends before, but there's something different happening now that you've written about. Tell us about it.
I think 10 years ago, I wrote, I think very optimistically, that the small forces that were really being driven by the world of choice and technology, it's really going to be kind of incredibly optimistic. I think this book is a little more sobering because I think as we look at the microtrends we face now, as we look at how technology is being driven by AI and big data, as we look at some of the shifts in demographics, I'm a little bit more worried that if we don't do some things to fix democracy, that curb some of AI, that give more disclosure, that things could go off the rails a bit.
I love how you have separated each of the chapters in the book to different areas, life, social, science, different areas you've attacked microtrends in that regard. Tell us about some of the big ones that you think are coming.
Well, I think that, the way microtrends works is I give a little explanation at the beginning, and then we have 50 trends, and I usually start out with dating and romance because, it gets people interested. So, one of my favorites is graying bachelors. It turns out that if a guy now makes it to 64 and is single, he's going to find that there's 100 single women for every 62 men. And between online dating, seniors having more money, living a different lifestyle, he'll be living the life of Fonz today. So I look at some of that. I look at a very important one, I think, is what I call footloose and fancy free, where kids today, as they grow up, really will have 10 or 15 years on their own, going through college and early work phase and having pushed back the first date of marriage. And that 10 or 15 years used to be 5, 4, or 3. But during this period now, they make so many choices on their own. They tend to push back religion. They tend to be the ones responsible for reviving urban life. But they also don't know what property taxes are and kind of live in a very, very different environment that we've never had before. So, and just throw one more from related to them, single with pet. So it turns out that if you're spending 10 or 15 years on your own, not having a child till late 20s, early 30s, say, hey, maybe I should get a dog. So there's tremendous growth for the pet industry right there. And those pets get incredible amounts of disposable income and dog walkers and people giving them attention until the owner decides to have a family, in which case it becomes a rather neglected pooch. And as I say in the book, there'll probably be a need for a lot of pet psychologists as that happens.
That was the one that drew my eyes immediately in the book, and it sort of hit some of the headlines yesterday with sales of pet food growing faster than packaged human food. Lots of growth and lots of trends happening in that area. And, I think to most of us with pets, they are our children, aren't they?
Yeah. Exactly.
Go ahead, please.
No, microtrends one, I had pet parents because a lot of people when the kids grow up were then getting pets. So that's why you've seen the pet industry just have double digit growth for year after year here.
One of the other areas I thought was interesting is the protein versus carbohydrates part of the microtrends. Agriculture is a big issue on this show. We talk about it a lot. You see some big changes coming in that area.
One of my favorites. I mean, the old farmers versus the ranchers has been going on forever. And if you look at that from the table first. Well, you remember a time when the government said, hey, carbohydrates is really what to eat, and then it turned out, well, everybody got fatter, so the government kind of pulled back on that, and then they said protein is right. So then I went to research. I figured, well, okay, we all know the protein's soaring. What's the protein that really won out? Well, beef, I think, got saved very much because it was on the decline. But then you've seen some increases in salmon and shrimp and things like that, but Americans don't eat a lot of fish. It really turns out chicken was the big winner. Chicken went from 20 pounds a year consumed by an average American to 90 pounds. I took a look at the strains, by the way, and I immediately bought some stock in some chicken producers here and in China, figuring that chicken is becoming really the protein of choice.
One of the things that I think is in the headlines today, and you know, is this deal with Facebook and how we're all being spied on. I was interested and drawn to the area of the book where you talk about how our in all of these areas of micro trends, our smartphones are the key spy tool for everybody that's wanting to market to us.
Well, micro trends very much says, you know, data is the new oil, the new gold. That in this time, every single, you know, provider or business has to have an incredibly detailed file on their customers and to make marketing more efficient to them, and that those that don't really will lose out. So I think that's a critical underpinning to you know, how business is going to grow. I think I warn less about, per se, Facebook's targeting than I do that, hey, tech is getting so big that there are only a couple of people who control almost all the advertising, Facebook and Google. I was also chief strategy officer of Microsoft. And I warn in particular about AI, and I almost laugh at the idea that we're going to have driverless cars anytime soon. And I'm surprised at the incredible investment in that. There was a tragic accident just 2 days ago, but I warn in the book that I do not believe is happening for quite some time.
Yeah, I think that there's I've heard others say the same thing. Mark, let me ask you this, because I think people will go out like I did and start reading this book and think of areas, and you've even suggested that you did it after your first book, was to find areas to invest in. Is there a danger or in doing that without doing more education, or is that what you're hoping from the book?
Well, I hope you can. I find people use the book in several ways. First, people usually find themselves, whether they're a nonagenarian or a single with pet or a cancer survivor or one of the many different trends. And I think people enjoy finding themselves in the book. Second, I get a lot of business people. Last time I had Sun Haters, for example, where parents go out and tell kids, hey, they used to say, go out and get some sun. They now say, go out and don't get some sun. So the business wrote me and said, you know, we redid our whole line based on that chapter. We did very well because we made it sun protective clothes. And so I look for businesses I think can catch ideas. And then I think investors can catch some ideas in terms of new marketplaces. And I think finally also people can sort of get the skill to find their own microtrends, which is to understand, have a hypothesis, find some data, think through the implications for business, for, you know, we talk a lot about the Uptown Stoner marketplace being a big growth one. Find your own marketplace and validate it in the same way these chapters are written. So those are all the different ways. And then I hope people just have a little fun reading this book. I think it's very serious on the one hand, but also, as I say, you can read the chapters like popcorn. Just pick out the kernels you really want.
Yeah, I would agree with that, enjoying it right now. Mark, we appreciate you being up with us and on, and best of luck with the book.
Thank you very much.
Mark Penn, the author of Microtrends Squared, The New Small Forces Driving the Big Disruptions Today, out from Simon & Schuster.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are off 176 points and implied open later down 141. As we are watching international markets lose ground as well this morning. NASDAQ futures off more than a percent, down 79 points, and S&P futures down about 19 points this morning. By the way, developing this morning, China has vowed to take all necessary measures to defend China's interests. If President Trump targets China for allegedly stealing American technology or pressuring U.S. companies to hand it over, the Commerce Ministry says in a statement this morning, China will not sit idly by and see its legitimate rights damaged. The Trump administration expected to slap trade sanctions on China a little bit later on today. That could be what is impacting the futures market this morning. And now the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look back to yesterday's cattle trade, make it 5 days in a row that cattle futures have fallen at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. April live cattle closed down $1.87. June cattle ended down $1.62. And, of course, some investors and traders adjusted position ahead of the monthly cattle on feed report due out tomorrow, and it's expected to show a growing number of cattle adding to the supply. Turning to the grain market yesterday, the wheat futures and the soybean futures ended higher. Wheat ending higher because of the promise of rain in winter wheat country. And the July contract was up 0.75 cents a bushel. Soybeans, July, up a penny a bushel in yesterday's trade. We are continuing to get those estimates on the size of the Argentine soy crop from various trading firms. Yesterday, Rabobank, in its monthly report, said it expected Argentina's 2017-18 soybean production to fall below 40 million tons. Rabobank cut its Argentine soybean crop estimate from 46 million tons a month ago and put it down to below 40 million tons. And as far as activity in the planting season, yeah, it's underway way down in the southern plains. Not much progress made in the overall national figure on planting. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, March 22nd, no major government economic report scheduled for release today, but Freddie Mac, the mortgage company, releases its weekly mortgage rates report. We'll also get a report on jobless claims. The FHFA Housing Price Index is out, as well as the Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index is out. We'll also get a look at leading indicators and the EIA Natural Gas Report, along with the Kansas City Fed Manufacturing Index. Earnings today from Nike and Land's End.